Ok, mi stai anche a mettere This is what should be done by the one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. I not holding to false views, a pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Okay, you start with the meditation. So just get in your meditation posture. Welcome. Okay, so get ourselves in a meditation posture.
set up, sense of seclusion, and give up our bad mental states, give up our thoughts, give up events and people and everything in the whole world. Start by relaxing the body. Earth is just earth, water is just water, fire is just fire, wind is just wind. Just relax the body as it is. All the stories, descriptions. And I just scan through the body, just check the whole body is relaxed. Sense of uprightness, body relaxed, then we relax the eyes, the whole of the eyes, letting everything settle, the mind becomes peaceful. Setting up this sense of seclusion, we can have that with our meditation object. Now if we have a theme for meditation, now's the time to bring it up. As I'll give a brief guided meditation on the breath, those who wish. Usually we choose a point of contact where we know the touch of the breath. Or we can see the wind element as it comes in and goes out, such as the tip of the nostrils, the upper lip, maybe even the heart or the center of the chest or the abdomen. Just choose a means that works for us and stick with it. If we like, we can have a mantra such as Bud with the in-breath, and Do with the out-breath. And put all of our attention, all of our gentleness and patience, just knowing an in-breath, knowing its feeling, knowing it as it is, knowing an out-breath. Sense of ease and peace and contentment, just in this much. Any hindrances are arising, we just do our best to let them go. Come back to the in-breath, come back to the out-breath. peace of renunciation, the peace of letting go, content with just this much. Oh, the in-breath. Oh, the out-breath. Tension to grow sharper, our peace to grow deeper. meditation. Those who wish to continue meditating during the talk can do so. Share a sense of metta with ourselves, with all beings. In the Thai forest tradition, all the great teachers teach us to develop a peaceful mind. Like Ajahn Chah, when he went to Ajahn Man, he's told him Buddha. Because to begin with, what we really need is peace and mindfulness. You know, we have faith in the Buddha, we've learned some of the Buddha's teachings. What we really need to do now is just practice. Because until we have a peaceful mind, then our practice is going to be more difficult. But with that peaceful mind, eventually, then that's the groundwork for, because we have samadhi, so then we can learn to actually see into the three characteristics of existence, like nicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering, not self. Because Lord Buddha's teachings is centered around what's called the Four Noble Truths. And so the first noble truth is suffering is to be known. You know? And so the great teachers would really say, until we've actually seen into suffering, until we see the danger of sense pleasures, we're not really going to want to practice. Because we think sense pleasures are better. No, I can enjoy pleasant sights, sounds, smells, taste, touch. Why should I meditate? Why should I follow the Buddha's teaching? And actually in Buddhism, now, that's the mark of a true elder, is somebody who teaches the danger of sense pleasures. And so, you know, these aren't small things. But there's different paths of practice in Buddhism. So, you know, developing the peace is good. And some people have a tendency towards jhana, towards absorption and peace. And those temperaments, it's hard to actually get them to come out and contemplate because they just enjoy the meditation, they enjoy the peace and the happiness. And then others got to be careful because their tendency is to think a lot. So they want to think a lot to the point where they don't even have any peace left. And then it just turns into proliferation. So you've got to find out first, you know, you've got to put a lot of effort in to get that general practice going. And living in the world is difficult. This is why the Buddha, you know, his main teaching is for people gone forth because it's easier. But at the end of the day, whether somebody is a monk, or ordained, or whether they're a lay person, it's really only if they've seen into the dangers of sense pleasures and that they're actually going to want to practice. So just because somebody's in robes, it doesn't mean that they're going to, you know, you might find a lay person is practicing better than people who are ordained. But the karma is much greater when you're ordained. So if you do bad in robes, you know, the consequences are far greater. So that's why the four parajikas for a monk, or if you do those four things, that's enough to go to hell. So they're not small things. Or if you cause a schism in the sangha, that's enough to go to hell to the end of a universe, like for an aeon. And so, you know, the consequences of actions are much greater. But whether we're in robes or we're not in robes, we all have to practice. And what are we practicing? We're practicing to end suffering. And so this is why having a peaceful mind is useful, because like this teaching that Stephen has just translated for me, Lumpur Tetz, we're talking about ending greed, hatred, and delusion. So that's what an arahant is. Now, true peace is the end of defilement. So when we get to taste peace in our meditation, you know, the more we can use that peace to contemplate, it means that we're ready for sickness, we're ready for old age, we're ready for death, you know, we're ready for disaster. It doesn't matter if the world ends tomorrow, you know, because we know we're a good person. We know we're practicing. We know we're doing, making use of our time. And this idea of ending greed, hatred, and delusion, it's not an easy thing, you know. So these, and so another way of looking at it is like the 10 fetters. So the first stage of enlightenment, you know, we're overcoming doubt. You know? So doubt about the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, doubt about the training, doubt about our meditation object. We're one who becomes relentless in our practice. To actually see that first thing, we have to not only know the Buddha's teachings, but we have to live by them. Because if we say the Buddha is our teacher, then it means if he's our teacher, then we have to do what he says. You know, it's like making a recipe and you just decide to leave out half the ingredients. Well, it's not going to end up exactly, you know, what you thought it was going to be. Or if somebody gives you directions to go to a city and you walk in the opposite way, well, you're never going to get to that city. And so this is like the Buddha's teachings that, you know, to follow the Dhamma is to go against the stream. So it's not going to be easy. But the Buddha's given us different ways of meditating, which makes it easy for us. So in the world, like I was saying earlier today, for example, the six recollections, where you say the recollection of the Buddha, you know, Itipisa Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddha, you recollect the qualities of the Buddha, like the Buddha is the perfectly self-awakened one. You know, through all his own efforts, through countless aeons, he woke up to the Dhamma. And the Jatakas, if you ever read some of the Jatakas, why they're inspiring is they show what the Buddha actually went through to become a Buddha. You know, because you have to perfect the 10 paramis to basically the point where you don't have any personality left. So you have to overcome all of those idiosyncrasies of defilement. So it's a much more difficult path than any other path to become a Buddha. That's why it's the supreme path. And so when you contemplate these things, then it brings inspiration up in your mind. And that inspiration, if you're able to sustain that, you know, the body becomes tranquil, rapture arises in the mind, and the mind cools off and sukha arises. So this is the same process as breath meditation. This is the development of samadhi. And why those contemplations are useful is the Buddha said those six contemplations that lead all the way to enlightenment. You know? And even if you have children and duties and busy things, you can contemplate these things while you're doing all those duties, while you're in those busy places. So that's the remarkable thing about bhavana, is you don't have to be always have everything, you know, wait till every condition is correct so you can sit down and do your breath meditation. No, it's something to be able to apply your mind any time that you're not needing to think about something else. That's an opportunity we can meditate. But if we can also develop breath meditation, the supreme useful thing about breath meditation is it has the ability to cut out thinking. And I'm sure I read once that the Buddha even suggested that arahats who became arahats without breath meditation, he still recommended them to develop breath meditation, because it's the supreme meditation in the way it cuts out thinking. Because even an arahant who doesn't meditate, even though they don't suffer, you know, they don't have the same degree as peace as somebody who doesn't do breath meditation. Because you still have your khandhas, you know, you still have your existing karma. So the breath meditation is a supreme meditation. So even the arahants, you know, they still want to find time to meditate, you know, they're supreme beings. And so, but whether we do the six recollections, like recollection of the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, generosity, sila, the five qualities of the devas, or we have our breath meditation, another good one is death. Because when we contemplate death, we get a sense of urgency, you know. And like the one I usually say is, you know, we will all die, that's for sure, or all of us are certain to die, or whatever it is, a sentence that reminds you that everybody's going to die. Because if you do that with the breath, as a mantra through the day, like you're hanging out the washing and you're walking down a corridor and you have that as your mantra, then It's going to cut out all your thinking. You're not going to be worried about useless things, because any person who comes up in your mind, any event that comes up in your mind, it doesn't matter if they're all dead. You know, if everybody in the world's dead, well, who cares about possessions, you know? And, you know, so you're not going to, if your life's on the line, you're not going to care about stupid things. And so this is why the Buddha taught the monks in some of his teachings to practice, you know, like your head's on fire, like your clothes is on fire. Like, you know, if your head's on fire, are you going to say, "Oh, I'll put out the fire later on"? No, you know, now you're going to try and put out that fire. You're going to use every bit of energy you got to put out that fire. And so this is why the Buddha's pointing us to suffering. We have to see right now that we're suffering. And if we're delighting in worldly things all the time, and we're not interested in practice, then this is why we need these contemplations. You know, you might trip, you might crack your head. That's it, you're dead, you know. Or you have a heart attack or a brain aneurysm, or any number of ways that you can die. So any moment, death can come. And so this vigilance or samvega, spiritual urgency, it comes out of us actually reminding ourselves of the importance of practice, importance of seeing into the Buddha's teachings. And death is a supreme teaching, because if we have wisdom and we contemplate death, it will lead to the deathless. You know, so if we have faith in the Buddha, and that's our meditation object, it leads all the way. And even any of those other contemplations, because at the end of the day, what we're doing is unremitting mindfulness. You know, so this is why the supreme teaching is the four foundations of mindfulness, because all of these things go into there. But death is supreme because it really brings up a sense of urgency. It's useful if we do it with our breath, because then you're also able to develop peace. And I like when I do Buddha or breath, sometimes, or death with the breath, you know, sometimes then your mind might go and contemplate that. You know, like Lumpur Tet said, and then, you know, then you're investigating, like, you know, the qualities of the Buddha, and you're getting interested in it. Because it's that interest, that keenness, that application of our mind, you know, fully engaged in the meditation object. You know, that's what the practice, where it's starting to come, you know, stronger and stronger. This is the unremitting mindfulness. Because if we just do the same meditation and the same thing every day, it's kind of like going to school and you're not really interested in learning anything. You know, you just kind of go there and you sit in your class, and then come to exam time and you haven't really learned anything. So you know, you got a little bit, you know, it was okay, it was worthwhile, but it wasn't your full best try that you could do. And so not saying that we necessarily have that ability all the time, but this is why the Buddha's given us different tools, because he said that the person who is vigilant, the person who, you know, is keen and understands that at the end of the in-breath they may die, at the end of the out-breath they may die, that's the kind of mind that the Buddha actually recommended. So much so that the Buddha said that he knew with every in-breath and every out-breath, death. So that was the power of Lord Buddha's mindfulness. And by the time he was a Buddha is aware of, you know, the breath and death at every single moment of being with the breath. And such is the power of somebody who develops breath meditation to the fullness, that even their last in-breath and out-breath will be known as their dying. As such is the strength of their mindfulness. So these are like not small things, just to give you an example of the extent of it. And because if we just meditate and focus on peace, then what we're actually doing is meditating to hide from suffering. So peace is good, but we need to use that peace to actually contemplate the difficult things. Like, what happens if we lose a limb? What happens if our head gets chopped off? What happens if our house burns down? How are we going to react at that moment, you know, if these terrible things happen? Because if we don't have mindfulness at that moment, then, you know, all the worldly winds will overcome our mind, we'll lose our mindfulness, and then when we die at that time, it won't be peaceful. And so the Buddha taught his disciples, and this is even lay disciples, those are the lay disciples, the teaching I remember, that when you die, you should just move on. So you shouldn't be thinking about, you know, your family. You shouldn't be worrying about, you know, what's going to happen to your parents or your house or your possessions. You just move on. That's it. It's done. Over. Meaning that that's the best way, you know, to fulfill your karma, is that you live your life as if you're ready to die at any moment. So everything's always complete, you know. And the only way we can have that kind of mind is through mindfulness and contemplation. And if we don't have enough peace, like Lumpur Ted said, it's like taking a feather to the fire. If you take the feather to the fire, it will shrivel. And so if you don't have enough peace and you go and contemplate death, then the feather will shrivel. So you need enough peace to be able to sustain your contemplation without the mind getting sad, without the mind getting upset. But to begin with, it's going to be difficult. You know, it's not easy to think about coarse meditation objects. But so we just, you know, go, okay, well, how about I do 20 minutes meditation of peace and then I'll contemplate for 5 minutes. So you find some reasonable amount. Because those five recollections that the Buddha had for lay people, old age, sickness, death, all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. And the one on action, that we're the owner of our action and inheritor of our action. So if these are the five regular contemplations, then how often are we contemplating these things? You know, for the monks, he has 10 regular contemplations with those five in there. And so this is where the Buddha is teaching us, this is what we're meant to be focused on. You know, these are the things that actually cut away our worldly desires. And you don't have to be a monk, you know, to practice, as the Buddha said. So we need a meditation object that brings us peace and happiness at the first level. But ultimately, it's the contemplations that are going to cut away at our defilement. And so it's like when I started that meditation on breath, on elements, you know, that's one of the simple ways of starting to break down our attachments. Contemplate the elements, all the earth that's in me. It's like somebody was shouting at this carpet here. Would you get upset? If they just stood there and abused the carpet and threw things at the carpet. But then they start abusing this body and throwing things at this body and shouting at this body, and suddenly we get upset. But isn't this body just earth? Is it the same earth that it was last week, last month, last year? No, if they shout at a toilet bowl, you're going to get upset at them. And so this is the way we've got to think. You know, you take the Buddha's teachings, but then you actually have to contemplate them till they become second nature. And so this is what we're doing in Buddhism, is we're changing our perceptions. And the only way we can change our perceptions is through either powerful peace pointed at contemplation, or regular contemplation with some peace. You know, so without the peace, the mind won't be interested in these things. But, you know, however we practice, what we're trying to do is start to separate ourselves from the stories and the attachments that we have in this life. Because when we were born, what did we come with? You know? We didn't bring anything with us. We just had our karma, that's all, are the results of our actions. And when we die, what do we take with us? We just take the results of our actions. So actually, when somebody dies, we should just think, well, now they've died, now they fare according to their actions. So we don't need to be happy or sad when somebody dies. We don't need to be happy or sad when somebody's born. You know, these are just the results of actions. And so this is the way the Buddha teaches us to start to separate ourselves from these things. And so as we're sitting here, we're breathing air in and out. So the breath that we're breathing in now is a part of our body. And now the breath that we're leaving out is no longer a part of our body. And so we're constantly changing right before our eyes. So when we grab hold of our label, like, I am Kassapa, this is Wayne, this is Bill, this is Lorenz, and so forth. That's just rubbish. You know, so these have a use because, you know, we can say them by name and they know who we're talking about. But ultimately it's rubbish because with that name comes delusion. with that name comes defilement. Because we think that person is real. That's the person I knew last week, last month, last year. That's the person who was a baby. But actually, all of their elements are totally different. They're changing right before our eyes, and we don't see it. And so this is like what the Buddha is teaching us, is to have the strength of mind to see these things. This is what he means when we're giving up our sense of self. So first, on the first level, we need the virtue and the generosity. We need to become excellent beings. But what we're giving up is our delusion in identification, saying these elements are me, this body is me, these elements are those people. Because that's what's bringing us suffering. You know, when somebody dies, when we don't get what we want, when somebody we don't like comes near us, and all these things, you know. So it's always suffering is right around the corner, as long as we have attachment to saying, I want things like this, I want things like that. But, you know, if the Buddha, as long as he traveled, I think in the last, he recalled his 91 universes of past lives. 91 universes of past lives. So for the full period of the last 7 Buddhas on this planet. And so all of those lifespans he looked at. And he said, well, if I've fared this long journey through samsara, and then also there was his original aspiration to become a Buddha, which was like 4 asankhayas in 100,000 kalpas ago. So that's like millions of universes ago was his aspiration to become a Buddha. So you can imagine all of that time. And then the Buddha said, well, you know, so even say you've got the best partner in the world, or you're the greatest king with all the wealth in the world. You know, you can still only eat from one plate. You still can only wear one set of clothes. You can still only have one partner. And ultimately, that karma between the beings that you know will eventually disappear. You know, they'll become strangers to you in the future. So the strongest attachments that you have, they all fade away. They all break away. And so this is the problem with samsara, that this endless round of rebirths, as far as we go, all there is change. And so this is why the Buddha teaches us that we have to see this change, and we see that whatever can change is suffering. You know? And whatever is suffering, that is not a self. That is not an atta, a higher self, or a soul. Because all it is changing, it's insubstantial. There's nothing there ultimately that we can cling to, that we can identify with. And because of that, we should put it down. Because you can't stamp a label on saying, this is me, this is mine. So even Brahma, God of the universe, when the universe dies, he's exhausted his karma, so he loses that seat. And so this is the problem. This is why I like reading the Jatakas occasionally, because you see what the Buddha went through. Like, even the Buddha had defilement, you know. And, you know, he had pride and he had all of these things and he had to learn to give them up. And so it's not easy. But if we just take our meditation and our peace and we start to look into these things like death and sickness and change, it gives us power to see that what the Buddha is talking about is true. That actually, even a little bit of existence is suffering. Even though we want it to be happiness, the moment we cling to anything, it's going to turn around and bite us. You know? So think of the best happiness that a person ever has. If they cling to that happiness, it will turn into suffering. Because then they won't want to let go of it. And so this is the danger of existence, that the Buddha doesn't mind if people want to get rich and do all of these things. But the problem is it leading us in the right direction? So it's okay to be wealthy, it's okay to live in the world, but only if you're going to practice as well, you know. And so obviously it's easier if you're in a monastery or you're a monk or something, because at least then you're limited in the things that you can do. So your life is focused on the spiritual. So if you're living in the world, you have to at least see, you know, what do I want out of this life? When I die, what do I take with me? I take with me my action. I take with me the inclination of my thoughts. Now, these things I take with me. So if we don't determine what is really important to us and make that like the highest things in our lives, then we're not going to go in that direction. And it's about consistency, like the way that I see, like Venerable Sariputta, in Foremost in Wisdom, is it's like aligning causes. I always say it's like those dominoes. So one domino knocks on another domino, knocks on another domino. And so from one little domino, within 30 dominoes, you can knock over the moon. So that's the power of exponential force. So you get a bigger domino and a bigger domino, and the force eventually could knock over the power, the size of a moon. And so this is like, when we practice, we need to have a goal, you know. Even though we're emptying our raft to travel quickly, we're still going to know where we're going. So what we're doing is we're emptying our raft of attachment to these elements. So to our misconceptions, and we're emptying the raft of our greed, hatred, and delusion. And one disciple, one lady once asked Ajahn Chah, you know, where is delusion? Where is delusion? I can't see delusion. And he wouldn't answer her. And she asked again, and he said, it's the horse you're riding on. You don't even see it. So the problem is we don't see our own bad habits. We don't see our own underlying tendencies. And so we need to be humble enough to realize that we don't know. You know, so the way the Buddha would teach a disciple is, you say, the Buddha is the teacher, I am a disciple. The Buddha knows, I do not know. So this is like the basic premise of Buddhism, because everything arises out of the Buddha. If there wasn't the Buddha, there wouldn't be the Sangha, there wouldn't be the Dhamma. And so this is where we have to keep humbling ourselves to say that we don't really know. Everything that we know grows up out of the Buddha. But then we take just a little bit of teaching, like even one line, like even just this contemplation of death is enough. And then we find whatever's interesting to us within the four foundations of mindfulness, within the Dhamma, and we make that our practice. And whether it's breath meditation, whether it's generosity, whether it's the recollections, whether it's death. And then we just, you know, keep going at that again and again and again. And that what we're doing is building up stamina. Because as we build up stamina and gumption, then our mind gets stronger and stronger, and we can apply ourselves for longer periods of time. And that application, this is what vitakka and vichara is, where you're picking up and sustaining to the object. And so these are the foundation of meditation. So like death, to begin with, maybe somebody can only contemplate it for 5 minutes. But if they stuck at it with their breath meditation, within a month, maybe you can do it for half an hour, you know, and then the result is that the mind gets peaceful. You start to get detachment, you know, and you start to see things in line with Dhamma. Because when we're seeing things in line with delusion, we're lost. You know, we're not, like when somebody dies, if our attachment is really strong, or you know, a relationship breaks up, or somebody loses a job or a child, quite often the passion will invade their mind and remain. And so that passion becomes suffering. And so what we need to do is practice in a way, whatever our defilement is, that we're containing it. That we know, oh, you know, this laziness or this anger or this conceit, you know, this is something that is dangerous like a fire. You know, it's hot on the top, it's hot on the bottom, it's hot on the side, it's hot on the left, it's hot in the middle, it's hot all over. And because of that, we have to know how to overcome that, you know. So whatever our defilement is, we overcome it by its opposite. And by training our mind to be wary of that, it's just like idle chatter, for example. Anybody who wants to realize the first path of enlightenment, you need right view. So for example, the 10 wholesome and unwholesome courses of action. So you at least have to have seen into those things to become a sotapanna, you know, or whatever the way of right view is. And so, by idle chatter, for example, you have to know how to extinguish unwholesome speech. Because if you can't extinguish your unwholesome speech, How is your mind ever going to be still enough? You know, so somebody who talks a lot thinks a lot. So the idea is this is why I think in the Right View Sutta by Venerable Sariputta, 10 wholesome and unwholesome actions is the very first one. Because to see into right view, you're seeing into action. It's very easy to see. And so I think that's why that's the first one there, is this is the most practical thing. You can see killing is suffering, not killing is not suffering. Stealing is suffering, not stealing is not suffering. And sexual misconduct, lying, aggressive speech, gossip, idle chatter, thoughts of covetedness, thoughts of ill will and wrong views, they're all suffering. And so this is why Venerable Sariputta was supreme, because he could teach people what right view was. Because right view is the heart of the Dhamma. Whatever he was taught in brief, he could expand the Dhamma. But the point is, we need to just take that strength of mind, that peace, and then strengthen our wisdom with it. Because if we just meditate for peace, then what's going to happen when we die? You know, is that peace really strong enough that it's come into our hearts? And then we have to see whatever underlying tendencies that we haven't dealt with in this life, they're going to be in our next life. So, you know, whatever passion, whatever greed, whatever anger, whatever delusion is there, this is going to arise for us again in the future. So this is why we have to see the danger of sense pleasures. Even if you're living amongst them, you still have to know that they're dangerous so that you don't get entangled into them. And so, you know, keeping the five precepts, there's still many things people can do. But still, to practice the Dhamma means that there's a certain level of renunciation. Because by the time somebody, you know, they'll be able to take those things into their heart, so they become invincible. So this is why a sila can't be overlooked. Because without taking these things into our heart, then what's going to happen in our next life? You know? So doing it by action is one thing, but taking it into our minds where we don't even want to assent to a thought in that direction is another level. So anyway, it is time. We have... on the reverse side... Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of illusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord, the Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Yata varivaha pura pariparanti sagara evam eva ito dinam petanam upakapati chitam patitam tunghaṁ kipam vimeva samijitu sabe parantu sangapa chando panaraso yata manijo tiraso yata savityo vivachantu sabaruko vina satu mate bhavan pwantarayo sukhiti kayuko bhavahabhivadana sili sanichan buddha pachayino chattaro dhamma vadanti ayuvano sukhan alam. Good evening. And Stephen T-